and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. On January 3rd, 2020, the U.S. in its terrorist attack assassinated Iranian anti-terror icon Commander Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. A few days later, on January the 8th, Iran launched its missile attack on a U.S. base, Ain al-Assad, in Iraq. No country had dared to attack a U.S. military base anywhere in the world, although there are 780 American bases in 80 countries. Well, the missiles that Iran sent were deadly and accurate, causing major damage to the facilities and major injuries to hundreds of American soldiers. So why didn't Washington respond? And does Tehran say that the retaliation for the general's assassination is over? We will look at this and more on Spotlight.
On the 8th of January 2020, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps launched a barrage of missiles at Ain al-Assad Air Base, which housed American troops in Iraq's Anbar province. The attack, codenamed Operation Martyr Soleimani, was in retaliation for the U.S. assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani. He, along with senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas, were martyred near Baghdad International Airport on the 3rd of January 2020 in a drone strike authorized by former U.S. President Donald Trump. All of the Iranian missiles hit their designated targets as American forces failed to intercept any, despite a high level of readiness in their bases across the region in the wake of Iran's pledge to avenge the assassination. In the meantime, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, stressed that the attack on Ain al-Assad was just a warning. Trump sought to portray the missile strike as a minor incident. Shortly after the Iranian attack, he tweeted, "All is well." Later, in a press conference at the White House, he tried to play down the magnitude of the attack.
No Americans were harmed in last night's attack by the Iranian regime. We suffered no casualties. All of our soldiers are safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases.
Controversially, media reports along with satellite images showed that the damage done to Ain al-Assad Air Base was much greater than what U.S. officials had acknowledged. There were also conflicting reports on the number of those wounded. Despite initially claiming that the strike resulted in no casualties, the Trump administration ultimately announced that over 100 U.S. forces suffered traumatic brain injuries.
Our shelter filled with dust, just kind of like shot into the shelter. Before that, we kind of accepted our fate.
The U.S. assassination of anti-terror icons General Soleimani and al-Mohandas raised popular calls in Iraq for the expulsion of American forces from the country. A few days after the assassination, the Iraqi parliament voted for the U.S. withdrawal. Amid the growing calls, the U.S. in December 2021 ended its combat mission in Iraq and limited it to an advisory role. Iran has time and again said the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq and other parts of West Asia is the ultimate price Washington would pay for assassinating General Soleimani, who played a key role in defeating the Daesh terror group in the region.
I'd like to welcome my guest to this spotlight, TV host and political commentator Sayed Mohsen Abbas out of London. And journalist and political analyst Mostafa Khoshchashm out of Tehran.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start this off in London and Syed Mohsen. I want to just start off by talking about the overall violation of international law by the U.S. with this terror attack on these resistance military leaders. I mean, unbelievable attacking a leader, a political leader also, who was on a a campaign and trying to calm the situation down in the region. Anyway, attacking him, killing him in a foreign country. I want to look at it overall, the violations from an international law perspective, and do you think that they will ever be held responsible for it in an international court?
Well, no one body really internationally in terms of legal reports can be approached. There is nobody that really internationally can hold the United States to account. The United States, of course, has exonerated itself from all international agreements and treaties. They regard themselves as exceptional. They regard themselves as above any law. Yet they hypocritically, of course, require everybody else to follow those very same agreements which they're signatories to. This is a standard practice, and they've long since shed any notion of being held to account by any international criminal courts, or whether it's the United Nations or any such body. So, first of all, I think there's absolutely zero, possibility of any international, agencies to go to bring Donald Trump and all the criminals who sponsored state terrorism, committed an act of, absolute judicial killing, cold-blooded judicial killing to a diplomat who was on his way to try and create some sort of rapprochement between regional powers. So absolutely not. There's nothing that the Americans really care about on that front, and I think everybody should really just give up any hope of that ever happening. That's my honest assessment.
Okay, Mostafa, there was a lot of fear in the West that World War III would be starting after the assassination of General Soleimani and the others. Doesn't that fear prove that the world knows that Iran is a force to be reckoned with? Because Washington actually assassinates people, striking them with drones frequently. But the anxiety that this caused was on a totally different level.
Hello, Nazia. Hello. To Syed Mohsen Abbas and the audience. Thanks for having me.
Thanks
for
coming.
The Iranian missile attack on Ain al-Assad was an epoch-making, a landmark development because it proved many things. It had so many messages as well as repercussions, not only vital for Iran and the relations or confrontation between Iran and the United States, but also for the whole world. You know, Major General Qasem Soleimani was the lead commander in the region when it comes to war against occupiers as well as terrorists. The same terrorists that were called by Donald Trump during his presidential campaign in 2016 when he was talking about ISIS. He said that they were created by Obama and Clinton. And we have so many confessions, direct confessions from former and present Democrat and Republican officials in the White House, in Washington, actually, who have all admitted that the U.S. and its allies created the ISIS or ISIL or Daesh in this region. And they admitted, many of them, like Petraeus in a documentary on Haj Qasem Soleimani's life when he was alive. It was aired on, BBC Channel 4 in Britain, and they admitted that Qasem Soleimani was the top commander who crushed ISIS and eradicated ISIS. So this ISIS, as we do all remember, that if it hadn't been for Qasem Soleimani, IRGC force, as well as Hezbollah, Hashdashabi, Syria, and many others in the region that eradicated Daesh, that there would have been thousands or tens of thousands of victims in Europe. We do remember the ISIS attacks in Nice, London, Madrid, and in the Philippines and elsewhere throughout the world. They even declared a caliphate in China. Who crushed them but Qasem Soleimani? So this attack was a direct display, a flagrant violation of international laws, but it directly displayed how the United States supports the terrorists, and it was pretty well known that it would trigger a new era, and it has.
Okay.
Look at the number of attacks on the American forces
and the region
now.
Stay with me, Mostafa. I'm going to get into that a little bit later in the program. But Syed Mohsen, your overall analysis that Iran could and did strike that American base immediately, really, after the burial of General Soleimani.
Well, the base they struck, of course, was very, very significant. It's one of many bases that basically encircle Iran. And this was the tactic of the Israeli Yinon plan combined with the American forces on the ground to basically hem in Iran. So when Iran responded with this larger ballistic missile response, it really is unprecedented. No other nation has attacked American military bases in this way, certainly not with ballistic missiles. And that, I think, is very much something which has rattled. The Islamic Republic of Iran, first of all, sent them a very clear message. By their own admission, by the admission of General Frank McKenzie, who were that attack, and in fact the assassination of Lieutenant General Soleimani as well, he says very clearly that we had no defense against this ballistic missile attack that was launched. I'd never experienced anything like it. The result was hundreds of their soldiers were basically brain traumatized and are still suffering from PTSD and all sorts of other related medical conditions. 1,000 pound warheads were attached to these weapons. 16 of them landed, that's the estimate that they've given. And people like the Army Major General who were on the ground, who were running for cover, basically weren't even given. And this is why I suspect, rather, that the American army itself or the American administration didn't really care about their soldiers in this place. They knew the missiles were coming in, yet they made those soldiers stay there. On top of that, they gave them bunkers, Marzia, which were inadequate. They were not geared up for anything like this. In fact, I would say Donald Trump has kind of the responsibility of not only the murder of Qasem Soleimani, but his own citizens, his own soldiers, were basically neglected. What the result of it all is that the Americans now know very clearly that Iran is capable of exacting very precise damage to any interests that Americans have, military or otherwise. In fact, they're able to do it straight to the heart of Tel Aviv. Mm. That has been a major significant result, I think, of the slap that Ayatollah Khamenei said they had promised, and they delivered there as a warm-up.
Okay. Well, Mostafa, I mean, there were attempts to downplay the significance of this Iranian missile attack, but I want to look at the other side of it. Now, Syed Mohsen just talked about the significance of it, but I want to, your perspective. Why do you think that the United States tried to downplay it and did not respond? I mean, with Trump basically saying there was no damage and no one was hurt, and of course we know that there was great material damage, and also, as Syed Mohsen just described just now, hundreds of soldiers who were hurt. So your perspective, why, first of all, didn't the United States respond as they tried to show to the world that no one dares to touch them, and Iran sent these accurate missiles and definitely did more than touch them? Your thoughts.
Okay. From the viewpoint of an Iranian analyst, I know, we all know IRGC, the Islamic Republic, and we know Iran, and we know the power. But this is not specifically so from the viewpoint of a foreigner, even if it's like a Russian or a Chinese. Although they are in good terms with Iran, they may not, have the strong belief in every word that we say, including revenge for Haj Qasem Soleimani or any attack. I remember quite well after Supreme Leader, who was the first to say just a few hours after Qasem Soleimani was assassinated that Iran would take revenge, very, very tough revenge. I was the first to appear on the same night on Iranian Persian language channel 3 TV to say and to promise that Iran would reciprocate this attack in 72 hours, and it happened because we do all know how Iran feels and Iran's power. We do know what Iran can do and set fire to the entire U.S. and U.S. allies throughout the world. But after Iran did it, even the Chinese and the Russians said that we never believed you would do the attack. Now we remove our hat in honor and in respect for you. The Chinese said the same. After a few weeks earlier, before the assassination, Iran shut down the global hawk. The Chinese said the same. But this time it was way bigger because it was the first time that the United States came under a cross-border attack by another party, not like Vietnam or Korea. This was totally different. It was a cross-border attack. Now, this attack, I mean, the annual Assad attack, had several messages. First, it proved that Iran is serious, and when it says that it would defend itself against any invader, it does that when it makes a promise. Second, it has the capability and the means and advanced means. Third, it showed that Iran is not afraid of the other side, even if it's the superpower or the world top power. No matter who is standing on the opposite side, Iran stands resolved to take revenge. More importantly, it showed that the U.S. sanctions have failed to block Iran's progress. On the contrary, they have encouraged Iranians to develop their own means and instruments and develop technology. In a matter of 2 or 3 decades after the Iraqi imposed war on Iran, when Iran could not even import barbed wire, that it was under tough sanctions, it had nothing, couldn't produce even a bullet. Now, after 2-3 decades, it has produced precision striking missiles, ballistic missiles, that even U.S. top generals throughout the past 1 year, they've been acknowledging that Iran has developed such a capability, unique capability in area of ballistic missile technology. More importantly, maybe in next question I'll deal with that. I believe the most important factor was showing that the U.S. military threats lack credibility when it comes to Iran.
Okay.
It displayed pretty well, very tangibly, why we say the U.S. is moving on a course of demise, why the U.S. cannot start war with a country, a regional power, like Iran. And this is the most important factor that I'll deal with in the next question, maybe, because it has an everlasting impact on Iran-U.S. confrontation, even when it comes to the Vienna talks.
Okay,
it was
stay with me, Mostafa, said Mostafa. Said Mohsen, I'm going to pose that same question to you. Why is it, do you think, that the United States did not respond? Because, of course, in front of the world, when it wants to show that it is the hegemonic power of the world, then naturally, then they should have responded. Your thoughts about that?
Well, firstly, the Americans know perfectly well what the capability of Iran is in terms of hitting back and hitting the American interests. So, first of all, let's not forget that the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, is the Persian Gulf. It's controlled by Iranians. Nobody else controls that tract of a very important trade, if you like, transportation. So oil, energy, etc., around the world could basically be thrown into turmoil if Islamic Republic of Iran chooses. It doesn't even need a nuclear weapon or anything like that. It could bring large parts of the world to their knees simply by blowing up that entire Hormuz Strait and shutting down that entire pathway for getting oil out. So, secondly, the Americans, of course, won't gamble on that, in my opinion. I think the other thing is that they also know, the Americans know, that they can't do anything on a military ground basis. They don't have the means to be able to execute any kind of invasion of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They wouldn't dare. They also are very aware of Karbala 5 and the way that the Iranian forces fought, even without sophisticated weapons, back in the sacred defense, as it's known, the war against Iraq, which was again instigated and sponsored by the Americans and the Israelis, where Saddam invaded Iran. They remember how Iranians fought on the ground, so they don't want to taste that kind of battle. They know how the asymmetric warfare of the Islamic Republic of Iran is so much more solid now. from Yemen through to Lebanon, through to Palestine, through to Syria, in Iraq. Iran has consolidated an absolutely amazing range of military and other strategic partners who are capable of hurting American interests and Israeli interests very, very badly. The Americans have all this intelligence. They know perfectly well that if they're going to do something like this, they need to be able to back up what they're saying. I don't believe they have the on-the-ground capability. And apart from saber-rattling, virtue signaling, or imposing unilateral sanctions, you know, these are the only things that they have been capable of doing in order to try and impose their their rule order, as they say.
Well, Said Mustafa, there are some that say the attack was initiated, they say Trump. But isn't it true that this is basically part of American strategy? Biden was not particularly upset that these individuals were assassinated, just a little concerned about the ramification. I mean, what does this say about the whole American political establishment in your perspective?
You know, they are all the same. It doesn't make any difference. If there were some using cries or complaints against Donald Trump's assassination of Qasem Soleimani, well, it was not about the, you know, assassination. It was about the timing. They were saying that Donald Trump has done so to advertise for himself without considering the repercussions. Otherwise, they have all enshrined and endorsed the assassination, unfortunately. And no matter who is in the White House, they should pay back. That's for sure. No matter we have a deal in Vienna or now, or not, right now, in the next month, or in the next year, the issue with the revenge and reprisal for Qasem Soleimani stays there, and they should pay the price, no matter what happens. Now, let me say that the attack had several more messages. They displayed how advanced Iranian missiles are. Iran never intended to advertise anything, but it was somehow an advertisement for the Iranian missile industry in a way that it could enter the market of exports, missile exports, you know, after the attack and after the Aramco attack by the Yemenis when they defeated the Patriot missiles stationed in Saudi Arabia. Many countries like India, they called off their earlier contracts for purchasing Patriot missile system from the United States. But more importantly, the Iranian attack shattered the U.S. awe. You know, a few months later, the Russians started sending drones over the intruding American warships in the Black Sea. They never dared to do so. But after the Iranians shut down the Global Hog and after they, you know, sent missiles, attacked Ain al-Assad with ballistic missiles, the Russians were also, you know, encouraged and emboldened to send their drones to shoo off intruding U.S. warships in the Black Sea. So it shattered the U.S. awe, especially after Donald Trump warned, you know, he had earlier warned that if Iran went for a reprisal attack for the assassination and the terror attack on Qasem Soleimani, he would bomb 52 centers, cultural centers.
Right.
You know, it has a meaning. By cultural centers, it meant that he would go for dropping nuclear bombs or mother of all bombs to eradicate the Iranian civilization.
Right, right. And of course, we saw nothing. We saw nothing at the end. Let me just get, I have 1 minute left with Said Mohsen. Said Mohsen, Iran says retaliation for the assassination of General Soleimani still has not taken place, and ultimately the U.S. will be made to leave West Asia area. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, that's an indication that Iran will not rest till the key cancer in West Asia, which represents American interests and all of the what I call the Anglo-Zionist Empire's interest, is Israel. Until Israel is brought to heel in the region, I don't think the Islamic Republic of Iran can rest. The true, revenge Qasem Soleimani would be what Qasem Soleimani himself was targeting, which was that Al-Quds should be liberated and the Palestinian people should be allowed to live peacefully. And of course, the Americans and the Israelis who are creating all this this death and destruction should be erased from the region. That's number one. Number two, Iran has moved on. While they're saber-rattling, while the Americans and the West are still saber-rattling and trying to pin them with JCPOAs and nuclear red herrings, The reality is that Iran is moving rapidly towards China, Russia, and that alliance, whether it's through military alliances or whether it's through the 25-year comprehensive plan with China that Iran has instigated, or whether it's making relations in the north-south.
10 seconds, said Mossad.
All of this is the progress for the future, and Iran is going in the right direction, I think.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. TV host and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas out of London, and journalist and political analyst Mostafa Khoshesh out of Tehran. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
تبارك الذي إن شاء جعل لك خيرا من ذلك جنات تجري من تحتها
Blessed is he who, if he willed, could have made for you something better than that, gardens beneath which rivers flow, and could make for you palaces.
The 10th verse starts saying, تبارك الذي إن شاء جعل لك خيرا من ذلك جنات تجري من تحتها الأنهار ويجعل لك قصورا. Blessed is he, if that were his will, could give you better things than all that, gardens beneath which rivers flow, and he will give you palaces. This verse is addressing the Holy Prophet, and it has the intention of scorning the pagans' words and saying that they are unanswerable. Except Allah, who is it that has given gardens and palaces to them? Basically, except Allah, if we look closely, We can understand that there is no one who has created all of these beauties and blessings. And the question is, cannot such a powerful and mighty Allah provide better than those for you, the Prophet? But he does not want people to think that the personality of the Prophet ﷺ depends on wealth. He does not want the people to falsely believe that the character of the Prophet is connected to money, garden, and palace. He wants the life of the Prophet ﷺ to be the like of the life of common people, the oppressed, the poor, so that he will be a sanctuary for all of them, so that they will look at the kind of life he, as the Prophet, is having among them. But why it is said that gardens and palaces are better than what they wanted? For treasure by itself does not resolve all the problems and difficulties, but it must be changed to gardens and palaces by a lot of trouble. Moreover, they said that this Prophet ﷺ must have a garden to sustain him. But the Holy Quran says, تَبَارَكَ الَّذِي إِن شَاءَ جَعَلَ لَكَ خَيْرًا مِنْ ذَلِكَ. Blessed is he who, if that were his will, could give you better things than all that. And then it continues, جَنَّاتٍ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِيَ الْأَنْهَارِ. Gardens beneath which rivers flow. And he will give you palaces. وَيَجْعَلْ لَكَ قُسُورًا. The aim of Prophet's mission is something else. It is not these things.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
There is a sermon from Imam Ali alayhi salam that we find this matter completely and explicitly expressed. Imam Ali alayhi salam, in the 192nd sermon, says, when Musa, the son of Imran, went to Pharaoh along with his brother Harun, wearing shirts of wool and holding sticks in their hands, they guaranteed him retention of his country and continuity of his honor if he submitted. But he said, do you not wonder that these two men who guaranteed me the continuity of my honor and the retention of my country, although you see their poverty and loneliness, why don't I see gold on their wrists? He said so feeling proud of his gold and proud of his collected possessions and belittled wool and wearing woolen shirts. When Allah the Glorified deputed his prophets if he had wished to open for them the doors of treasures and mines of gold, and surrounded them with planted gardens, and to collect around them birds of the skies and beasts of the earth, he would have done so. If he had done so, then there would have been no trial, no recompense, no tidings about the affairs of the next world. Those who accepted his message could not be given the recompense falling due after trial, and the believers could not deserve the rewards for the good acts. And in fact, all these words would not have retained their meanings. But Allah the Glorified makes his prophets firm in their determination. He gives them weakness of the appearance as seen from the eyes, along with the contentment that fills the hearts and the eyes. This is how the believers must believe the Prophet. This is how the system of rewarding and chastisement of the Almighty Allah works. We'll continue, God willing, talking about this verse in the next program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Britain's highest rank for chivalry, awarded by Queen Elizabeth to former Prime Minister Tony Blair, a man described by campaigners as one of the most repugnant political figures in the world, in power from 1997 to 2007.
The backlash to the announcement has been immense and is only growing. Furious Iraq War veterans are now calling for the honor system to be overhauled. And more than 500,000 people have signed a petition calling on the Queen to strip the man they call a war criminal of his new title.
It's a designation routinely awarded to former prime ministers here, but anti-war campaigners say they're repulsed at seeing Blair receiving it. And they have their reasons.
For millions of people in this country, it's an absolute insult, as it is to the people of Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and various other places where we've now seen the war on terror over the last 20 years. And I don't see any justification for it whatsoever. I think that Blair never conceded that he was wrong about any of these things. The Chilcot inquiry, which was very, very critical of him, He immediately held a very long press conference afterwards and said he would do exactly the same again.
In mid-February 2003, just before the Iraq invasion, tens of millions of demonstrators in hundreds of cities across the world, including in London, marched against the impending U.S.-led war in the Middle East. To Tony Blair, the biggest protest march in British history was fatuous.
The fact is that had we been listened to and had Britain not taken part in the war almost certainly would not have taken place, that America would have been much less likely to go to war alone, and we would have seen a much different world today, a day where far more people would be alive as a result of that war not happening, would be far fewer refugees.
The U.S. claimed the regime of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction and actively pressed for invading Iraq in late 2001. The weapons were never found. Two decades on, 1 million Iraqis dead, 3 million dispossessed, and a region reeling from terrorism and instability. Hundreds of British troops were also killed in the same conflict. Anti-war campaigners say Tony Blair belongs in the dock at The Hague and not in the pantheon of great leaders. Saeed Puriza, London.
Cleared of criminal damage charges at Bristol Crown Court, Rhiann Graham, Myla Ponsford, Jake Scoos and Sage Willoughby dubbed the Colston Four celebrated their acquittal in a trial that's divided British public opinion. For those who had been on trial, relief and a sense of vindication.
We are ecstatic and stunned. I tried to write something ready for this moment and I'm just so overwhelmed.
We didn't change history, we rectified history.
We illuminated history. They lied. We illuminated history.
And this is the victory for Bristol. This is the victory for racial equality.
And this is where it began, at a Black Lives Matter demonstration in Bristol in June 2020.
I think the court accepted that this was almost a political show trial, that Boris Johnson and the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, had determined that they wanted to make an example of the Colston Four, and the courts rejected that.
The jury's verdict has garnered mixed reviews, with some MPs writing to the Attorney General, asking him to look once more at the wrong result. Elsewhere, there have been calls for the Home Secretary to explain why this case was so heavily pursued in the first place, and what happens now when that move has seemingly backfired.
The focus is now on high-profile monuments like the statue of Sir Winston Churchill, Britain's lauded World War II leader, but a figure that's being seen increasingly through the lens of his controversial views on race and empire.
New legislation being pushed through under the Police and Crime Bill will make defacing monuments punishable by up to 10 years behind bars.
Women watchers to your station will be surprised to know you can get longer for pulling down a statue under the new provisions than you do for rape, which is absolutely bizarre. But it shows the extent to which this government is intent on pursuing culture wars and criminalising the Black Lives Matter movement.
There is the hope that many local and national stakeholders will use the outcome of the Colston Four trial as a teachable moment, a chance to reflect on Britain's checkered past. But then again, maybe it will just be business as usual. Amina Taylor, London.
Hisham Abu Hawash has been refusing to eat for 141 days. But he's finally breaking his fast because the Israeli regime has agreed to release him next month. Abu Hawash has been receiving a great deal of support from the Palestinian people who have rallied, protesting his unjust detention and demanding his freedom. And now these people finally have a reason to celebrate. In Al-Khalil, Abu Hawash's home, his supporters have turned out to rejoice this victory against Israeli jailers. His family had an especially tough time in recent days after doctors warned that Abu Hawash's health was deteriorating, that he was slipping in and out of coma and facing the danger of sudden death. Now they can finally breathe a sigh of relief.
I thank all the Palestinians who stood with us. Thanks to everyone who helped my brother. I thank God they released him.
During the past 3 days, we lived through a psychological war that was carried out by the Israeli intelligence due to what was happening with my brother Hisham. There were strong maneuvers, but we overpassed those as a family. Today, Hisham achieved victory for all the Palestinians.
Now, Abu Hawash's lawyer says he would be hospitalized for medical follow-up before his designated release on February 26. Palestinian officials have weighed in, praising his resistance.
Hisham Abu Hawash prevails after 141 days of hunger strike. We hail Hisham for his forceful will, his family, Palestinian people, and people around the world who raise their voices in solidarity, thanks to countries that press Israel to release him next month on February 26.
Resistance movements have also poured praise on Abu Hawash, saying his victory should remind Palestinians how they can win every battle against Israel. The 40-year-old father of five children was arrested in October 2020 and started his hunger strike early 5 months ago to protest his detention without charge or trial that is allowed under Israel's administrative detention system. His lengthy hunger strike once again shed light on this illegal practice. Out of 7,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails, more than 500 are locked up without facing any charges or having a trial. For many of them, the last choice against this inhumane measure is to stop eating for lengthy periods of time. Still, the majority find themselves locked up in deplorable and non-standard conditions of the Israeli prisons, where they are sometimes even subjected to systematic torture and harassment.
In late 2020, Americans went to the ballots to pick the country's next president. 4 days after votes closed, Joe Biden was declared the winner. But the incumbent leader, Donald Trump, alleged vote fraud, and in doing so, shattered Washington's self-proclaimed image of the cradle of democracy. Trump adamantly refused to concede defeat after losing the 2020 presidential vote. On January 6, 2021, he called on his supporters to march on the Capitol and, quote, stop the steal. His fans attempted to do that. The world was shocked as news networks around the world showed thousands of Trump supporters forcing their way into the Capitol building, the symbol of U.S. democracy. Lawmakers engaged in the process of certifying the presidential election had to stop their task and flee for their lives. Some reports even suggest that a Republican senator was so frightened that he asked the Capitol security repeatedly to shoot the protesters. 5 people died in the chaos, one of them in the Congress building. To date, American authorities have arrested nearly 600 people and are looking for hundreds of more suspects. A big portion of the defendants stand accused of assaulting police officers. The FBI asked U.S. citizens to report each other out and tell the police if they knew anyone who had taken part in the riots. The incident inevitably had adverse consequences for the United States' image, both domestically and internationally. An opinion poll conducted last year by Harvard University showed that more than half of the country's young generation thought that American democracy is in trouble or failing. Moreover, an Axios survey indicated that now only 51% of the U.S. public thinks the next presidential election will be fair and free. Also, the Democracy Perception Index for 2021 showed that 44% of participants perceive the U.S. influence and meddling in the affairs of their countries as the biggest threat to democracy in their nations. At the same time, politicians and political analysts expressed shock and disgust at the chaotic scenes at the Congress grounds. Richard N. Haas, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, said the attack signaled a post-American era. The assault on the Capitol changed the face of Washington, D.C. as well. The Congress building was fenced off on multiple occasions after the riots. Furthermore, Joe Biden's inauguration was carried out under heavy military presence, with an unprecedented 25,000 troops ensuring security. That was bigger than the number of U.S. forces present in Iraq and Afghanistan on the same day. The police reaction to the Capitol riots also raised questions about the U.S. law enforcement's differential treatment of white protesters. Whereas black people could be killed and injured for much smaller crimes, police were in fact criticized for their late and subdued response to the deadly protests by Trump's supporters.
Representatives of resistance groups gathered in Beirut to pay tribute to Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The two anti-terror icons were assassinated in an American drone strike outside Baghdad airport on January 3, 2020. Participants in the event all agreed that Soleimani united the region in the face of a common threat posed by the U.S. and Israel.
Their martyrdom did not weaken the resistance. On the contrary, it led to more accomplishments and success for the resistance. They are alive. This type of life is what gives a strength to the resistance. Martyr Qasem transcended his country to become the martyr of the entire nation, and this is an exceptional characteristic.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that people in the region will stand united and confront the threat posed by the United States. Meanwhile, the Secretary General of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement, Ziad Nakhala, described Soleimani as the martyr of Palestine and Al-Quds.
The U.S. assassinated Soleimani because he was a barrier to American-Israeli plots in the region. He transformed the resistance fighters into a strategic threat to Israel and the U.S. I take this opportunity to say that we're proud of the positions of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is unwavering in its support for the Palestinian resistance, and I witnessed that Qasem Soleimani was at the forefront of the fight in defense of Palestine and the people of Palestine.
The Iranian ambassador to Beirut also said that there is a joint Iranian-Iraqi judicial lawsuit being followed up by both countries to try the killers of the Iranian and Iraqi martyrs who were assassinated by the United States.
Resistance groups in the region consider General Qasem Soleimani as a man and a leader who united them. People in Lebanon, even those who knew him only after his martyrdom, see him as a man who transcended borders and sacrificed his life for the sake of the people and regional peace and stability. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
This international conference is the gathering of Islamic scholars converged in the port city of Karachi against Islamophobia. They believe Islamophobia is a Western project to reshape Islam with tools like Daesh and others.
Participants of the conference stressed on the need of unity among Muslims and call on the Islamic countries to take serious notice of the forces hell-bent to sow seed of discords among Muslim Ummah.
Documentary films during the past years over the gruesome acts of Daesh in the name of Islam were played to remind people how terrorist groups were weaponized by Israel and the U.S. to distort the face of Islam in the West.
Actually, Islamophobia is a project of Western country who do not like the Western people come to Islam like Islam. And they mention many things that hurt the heart of the Islamic people, while Islam is the religious of love between the people.
This conference is very important for me, all Pakistanis, and all Muslims, because there has been so many criminal activities on behalf of non-Muslims or Western countries against Islam and Muslims.
Member of the international conference warned the Islamic countries to act quickly against the possible future threats given the previous experience with the West.
Islamophobia had been created to balance the teachings of Ahle Bayt alayhimus salam. It was created to balance and misguide people from the way of Quran and Sunnah. Things took place in the name of Daesh and so-called. And they did things which were absolutely against the teachings of Islam. They never understood.
The delegation in the conference also stressed the significance of the eradication of Daesh from Iraq and Syria to save Islam and also save humanity from the plague of terrorist groups like Daesh, which is seen as a Western plot against Islam and the Islamic community. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah lashed out at the United States as the mother of corruption and terrorism in the region and stressed that the expulsion of U.S. forces from the region will be the final revenge for the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Popular Mobilization Units Commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad in 2020.
We have declared earlier that the best revenge is the full withdrawal of U.S. troops from the region. And over the past 2 years, as the leader Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, the U.S. has been forced to leave Afghanistan with humiliation. This has led the U.S. allies to rethink their alliance with Washington.
In an address to a ceremony in Beirut remembering the martyrs Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and their companions, Sayyid Nasrallah also accused the U.S. of being behind all Israeli and Saudi crimes in the region for decades.
The lesson which I would like to highlight today is that everyone acting for the sake of God emerges victorious in all battles and wins the hearts and minds of all people across the Arab and Muslim worlds. They show us that the U.S. serves as a real enemy and source of corruption, occupation, and terrorism in our region.
Alice believes that the project of the resistance continues to face the criminality of the U.S. in Lebanon and the region.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani belongs to the school of thought of a struggle against the occupiers of our land and those who destroyed our homes and killed our people and led one war after the other with their support for the Zionists. He sacrificed his life and stood against terrorism in Iraq, Yemen, Syria, and Lebanon and Palestine. He taught us that Lebanon is strong enough and can remove itself from the U.S. hegemony.
The leader of the resistance stressed that the assassination of martyr Soleimani, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, has triggered a new phase at the regional level.
The assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and PMU Commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis is seen as an incident larger than the region itself, and for many analysts has brought to light a long-term confrontation for Lebanon's Hezbollah facing U.S. influence in Lebanon and the region. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Caskets draped in Iranian flag contains the bodies of 150 Iranian soldiers whose remains have recently been found more than 3 decades after the end of the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran. The mourning procession in Tehran is part of a larger national event which saw similar memorial services held for 100 more martyrs in 24 provinces across the country. The funerals were attended by Iranian military and state officials as well as thousands of Iranians to pay tribute to the martyrs and also to observe the second anniversary of the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military figure, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
We have returned, and now the people are greeting those martyrs who have sacrificed their lives. General Soleimani also was a personality who has sacrificed his life in order to maintain the security of our country. Now this is a coincidence with the second anniversary of martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, and now they have returned. As you can see, everyone is holding the picture of General Qasem Soleimani, and this shows a reminder of the job that General Soleimani has done for our country.
General Soleimani fought for the security of our country and the region. He pushed back the terrorists, and this made him as a popular figure in the region.
Lieutenant General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. He was assassinated in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. Soleimani is highly revered in the region for his anti-terror efforts and his role in eradicating Daesh terrorists from Iraq in 2017.
General Soleimani spent all his life fighting for our security, once in the Iraq-Iran war and then in the fight against terrorism. The U.S. assassinated him because he did not allow the terrorists to take over the region. The U.S. what with the terrorists?
We are all Qasem Soleimani. The United States thought in vain that if it killed our general, it would disrupt his endeavors. But we all will keep his legacy alive.
General Soleimani began his career as a soldier in the IRGC in the Iraq-Iran war. While above 200,000 Iranians are estimated to have either lost their lives or gone missing during the war. Over the years, the country has been carrying out search operations to recover the remains of those missing.
The Islamic Republic always holds such mass ceremonies to honor its martyrs, and General Soleimani is no exception, as the country also regards him as a martyr and a national hero. now on the second anniversary of Soleimani's assassination, Iranians have been using any chance to pay homage to him. These people say this is to preserve what Soleimani stood for. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.